The Spirit of Aviation, heard 24 hours a day, all year long on EAA Radio.
I'm Farid Gio. On a sunny day earlier this year, on a snow-covered mountain plateau near Mammoth Lakes, California, the quiet beauty was overshadowed by a man on skis with a very noisy backpack. The man, whose name is Troy Hartman, was testing out a pair of jet engines that are normally used in military UAVs. The engines eventually will be used to propel Troy through the air in his jet wing, which he has been building for the past few years.
And it's actually just such a really funny coincidence. I'm an EAA member myself. I just got my magazine in the mail today, and there's Yves Rossi on the cover, and that's kind of what I've been working on, is a jet wing similar to his. I've been working on it for a couple of years. It's pretty much done. Last May, we were kind of at the point where we needed to really start doing tests on the engines, and the main things we needed to figure out were running these engines close to my body and at high altitudes, because the altitude is a major issue, and I knew that Yves had some problems with his engine. I just creatively came up with the idea of, well, why don't I just build a self-contained pack, go up to high altitude, and maybe get on some skis, since that's my sport. And it was just a creative solution to try to solve two things. All of a sudden, I've invented a new sport.
It looks really fun. How many engines are you working with? Yves is he's got four of them. How many are you working with right now?
Oh, I'm only working with two because these are UAV engines, so they're substantially bigger than what he has.
What are some of the differences that you're doing with your wing as opposed to what Yves is doing?
I think simplicity. I found that with what he did with his wings, which I'm very impressed with him and his accomplishments, and really more than anything, his persistence, because, man, there are so many hurdles that I'm finding out about as we go along. Even with the technology out there to kind of lead the way, we ran into a lot of problems ourselves. But I would say simplicity. We have a couple of clever ways of keeping the wing really light and really simple, still having a lot of the system components that you need. And and it's interesting, just looking at his specs, this was actually the first time I really got the breakdown in the magazine of what his weights are and stuff like that, and it's crazy. I think it said that his empty weight is like 66 pounds or something, and I was shocked by that, because we're half that. You know, we're much, much lighter than that. You know, he's kind of gone a different direction with his wing now. You know, we're sort of kind of on an in-between and trying some different things. So it's definitely got its differences from his, but it's still a rigid wing.
With your experience with skydiving and sky skiing, what kind of guidance are you going to do with the jetpack wing? And what are you calling it?
It's a jet wing, and it's our working name is jet wing. And, of course, it's exactly what Yves calls his. We've thrown around some silly little names here and there. I got to admit that I've never really finalized another name that distinguishes it from his. He's proven that he can fly his. I haven't flown mine yet, so everything I say, you know, I could be totally wrong. Our design could end up being worse, but I feel like it's simpler, lighter, and attaches me to the wing better, and I think it's going to give me more positive control. But as far as flying the wing, it's still going to be a body fuselage. It's still going to be my body flying the wing. We're not opting to do control surfaces, because I think, again, our whole goal is simplicity. And if we start adding stuff like that, yeah, we would probably be setting ourselves up for a lot more challenges.
You mentioned that you are using UAV engines. Are they commercially available?
They're not made for models. They're not designed like the, you know, made for the model airplanes and all that stuff. They're specifically designed to put in military drones.
What can you tell us about your timetable for getting to your ultimate goal with this project you're working on right now?
I'm going to try to leverage the exposure that I'm getting from it to attract a sponsor of some sort to the wing, because I haven't had a sponsor attracted to the wing yet. And it's been really, really tough to secure the financing to help out. And I've had to do everything out of my own pocket. What my plans are is to do one more stunt with this skiing thing. It's actually, I have a mountain that I want to go up from bottom to top, and I've got that in the works. I want to make sure I get that in before the season ends. That will draw the attention to hopefully get some support on getting the wing out and doing the test flights. You know, I have to have a sponsor understand and believe that, hey, I'm the first American doing this. And that is a big deal. It may not be the first time you're seeing this, but it's just getting up and flying the wing, proving that it works, and then we can start to think ahead to, okay, how could we use this for exhibitions and what kind of cool stunts can you do, sort of like Eves. You know, he's done some really neat things and flying formation with, you know, airplanes, or we just have to come up with some neat things to kind of get people reinterested in it. It all comes down to getting lower and lower. And I know that Eves, naturally, he's working on a parachute system to safely deploy 500 feet. And that's going to be the natural progression of these things, because it's really hard for the audience to get psyched if you're at 3,000 feet. Yeah, I think that's the next thing, is how do we safely operate at air show level, you know, where you can get a parachute out instantly. And, you know, he's going for the rocket propelled, you know, but like a BRS type thing, which makes total sense. My guess is that I'm always going to be following in Eve's footsteps. I'm always going to be letting him lead the way and then maybe putting my own spin on it. Yeah, I just want to do a little bit. I just want to experience what he's experiencing.
Well, you've been going 200 miles an hour basically your whole life. Your dad was a pilot, and so flying was part of your life. And then at the Air Force Academy, and then aerobatic instructor. You own an RV4. How is that? How's that going for you? Are you enjoying your airplane?
Oh, man, that thing is the best purchase I've ever made. It's amazing. I bought it in 98 or 97, I think. It had like 1,200 hours on it. That thing has been just so reliable, just rock solid. The compression in the engines is the same as it was 14 years ago, and just been great, you know. And I probably wouldn't have stayed current flying if I wouldn't have bought it. I realize how lucky I am that I can go fly for as cheaply as I do. It's just been the best investment, the best toy I've ever had, and I'm not really ever planning on getting rid of it.
The RV4 seems like the most tame thing that you do, and a lot of people know you from your MTV show Senseless Acts of Video. How did this show come about? Because it's kind of hard to get noticed with all the different daredevils out there.
I was competing in sky surfing for the early 90s and was fortunate enough to get in the X Games and compete at the X Games. I won the X Games in 97, and that led to the Pepsi commercial that you may have seen on my site, the Goose commercial. And I was, you know, I was in the right place at the right time. I was the world champion sky surfer when they were looking to do that commercial. So I was naturally selected, and that commercial was a huge hit, like the winner in the Super Bowl that year. Right after that, MTV was trying to find, they were looking for a Jackassy type show. They met with Johnny Knoxville. He said, no, I want to do my own show. I don't want it to be, he wanted to do the show himself and sell it to MTV. They called me in because they were like, well, you do all this weird stuff. We've seen you. Maybe you can come up with some ideas. I said, well, I don't want to light myself on fire necessarily just for no reason, but there's a lot of stunts that could be done that I think people would like. And they said, well, like what? And I just started throwing out ideas. And the next thing I knew, they said, well, let's do a pilot. So we shot a pilot show, and it turned out really well. And they came up with this great idea for the concept of the show. We would just take music videos and whatever stunts we could find in music videos, we'd try to do them for real or redo them. And so it was a very fortunate situation. We did a year and a half or 2 years of that show. It was a great ride, but it was also, I developed an anxiety complex, a little bit of an anxiety issue from that show.
There's some incredible stunts out there. Just take us through that flaming parachute stunt, because one camera angle shows you aiming a flare gun right at the chute, and most jump instructors would advise against this.
It turned out to be probably the most spectacular stunt we did. That stunt was a fill-in for another stunt we were supposed to do, and we lost our approval. It was actually, they wanted me to fly my plane through this, like, crazy big tunnel. It was a pretty nutty stunt. I was pretty nervous about it, but they wanted me to try to fly my plane through something, and we couldn't get the FAA on board, and, you know, we had some issues we were up against, and they said, you know, we need to fill this spot. We need to do a stunt quick. What do we do? And it wasn't my idea. I wish I could say it were. Somebody came up with this idea. Well, could you just light up, you know, your parachute on fire? And it was like, oh, my God. Well, yeah. Yeah, sure. Why not? I mean, I thought it out real quick and said, we had to pull that stunt together in very short order. I mean, it was 3 or 4 days later. Some of the big challenges were keeping the parachute, because you see in the video, I have the parachute packed into a bucket in the plane, and it's kerosene or something. It's some sort of mix of flammable liquid. But the biggest issue we were up against was it evaporating, you know, really quickly once the parachute was open. They would inflate a parachute on the ground. Pyrotechnician guy had those big industrial fans, and they were inflating it, and they were timing how long from the time it was inflated, you know, being wadded up in a bucket of kerosene, how long it took, and they would test how long it took for it to evaporate by lighting it. You know, they would light, you know, different portions of fabric. Turned out it was like 7 seconds or something like that, 7 to 10 seconds it would evaporate. The trick in that stunt for me was to do a few things, and you see in the stunt I had to separate the slider, which is that little piece of fabric above my head that blocked my view of the parachute. I had to wait for the cameraman to get into position. We had to do all this stuff before the kerosene evaporated. So anyway, I fired the flare into the canopy, and really I thought nothing happened. I just immediately thought, oh no, all this work, and I waited too long. You know, I just waited 1 or 2 seconds too long, and of course I'm thinking that, just thinking, oh, and then I look up again, and I realize there's this one little hole that's just starting to grow. And I'm like looking at it, and then, yeah, the next thing you know, it's just like, oh my God. And I think I said a cuss word in there, because I just was like, oh my God, this thing's really happening. The whole thing just went perfectly. We couldn't have asked for it to go better.
And your experiment with flaming wings continued as you have the exploding Challenger stunt, where you jump out of a Challenger in ultralight, and then it explodes. Wow. And you float to the ground, the Challenger minus the fabric crashes to the ground. Most flight instructors would advise against this.
Again, there's a backstory to every one of these things. I had never flown an ultralight before we did that. So I had to go out with an instructor and spend a day training to learn how to fly it. The approach to landing is very steep. It's like you're diving at the ground, you know, totally different from what we're used to in a normal, you know, fixed wing airplane. I was kind of struggling doing like a quick 2-hour training thing, and the instructor was like, no, you really got to dive this thing at the approach, because I was coming in real shallow. And I kept making the joke, well, I'm not landing it. And he kept saying, no, that's a bad attitude. You need to know how to land this thing. But I was joking, but I was a little serious. I thought, you know, let's just really make sure I can take off. That's going to be the most important thing. And the winds that day were really strong. It was a really strong crosswind. You know, I talked to the pilot, and he said, we're going to just have to have you take off across the dirt, go over the taxiway, onto the runway, and then hopefully you'll get in the air, you know, before you get to the fence on the other side of the runway. And so that's what I did. Here I take off with this gas bomb on this ultralight, and it was really hairy. And then once I got up to altitude, you know, everything was cool. It's just I had to flip that arming switch. That was scary. I mean, that was a scary moment when I had to flip the arming switch, because you just open up the little protective red thing, and then you flip that switch, and you're like, man, if something shorts out, I mean, you're envisioning that the thing's going to blow up when you hit the switch. But no, it went well. It ended up working out well, so.
Troy, thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're listening to EAA Radio.